bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Welcome to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf, your source for total wealth management. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of Roe, his guests, and callers. Now let's begin the show. Here's your host, Roe Diefendorf.
Thank you for joining me on Three-Dimensional Wealth. I'm your host, Roe Diefendorf. And today we're going to be talking about ESOPs, the ultimate exit strategy tool for the private business owner. And today as guests, I've got two experts on the subject, and I've got Greg Sheets, and Greg is the president of Greg Sheets and Associated, located in Charlotte, North Carolina. A 20-year veteran in both investments in financial services and insurance. He's a member of the Million Dollar Roundtable, and he has a professional alliance with the ATI Capital Group, which provides business valuations, corporate transition planning, and ESOP consulting. And ATI Capital has participated in over 60 ESOP transactions since 1994 and will value between 50 and 60 separate entities this year alone. And in the other corner, weighing in, I have Shane Snively, and Shane is a senior planning associate with Diefendorf Capital, and he's based in Charlotte, North Carolina as well. And Shane's a sought-after speaker for numerous professional associations and organizations around the country on topics like ESOPs. He's been a featured main platform speaker at the International Certified Business Counselors Annual Conference. He's spoken in the North Carolina Society for Accountants, North Carolina Realtors Association, Carolina's Medical Center Residency Program, and some other business and nonprofit throughout the Carolinas. He's also a member of the Million Dollar Roundtable, and Shane is a member of the National Association of Charitable Estate Planners and the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors and the International Certified Business Counselors. So, having said all that, I want to welcome the two of you.
Thank you, Roy.
Thank you very much, Roy, for having us on today.
Well, good. You're welcome. Greg, I'm going to let you lead off. What is an ESOP?
An ESOP is a qualified defined contribution employee benefit retirement plan. It is unique in that it must invest in the stock of the sponsoring employer, and ESOPs have been around for about since ERISA of 1974 was when ESOP first came on the market.
Back in 1974, I was in graduate school at Georgia State, and in my program was, I think, the first fellow to do an ESOP. And these were guys that were sent in by corporations from all around the country, and at that time it was a master's degree in insurance, and that was sort of the avenue that they used. But, it was... at that point, completely new, and so we were in uncharted territory.
Indeed. In 74, I was in fourth grade, I believe.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And, but there are a lot of ESOPs that started in that era and have been in existence in some capacity or lack thereof. And so we run across ESOPs quite frequently that were established in the 70s that have really been shelved for 30 years, and the management folks really don't know what capabilities it has. It's something that they inherited, and they don't truly realize what all the capabilities that they can bring to the company's toolbox.
Well, the one main thing that when I think about it, and I sort of have categories, the category that comes to top of mind for me is exit strategy. You know, how to sell your company stock and pay no tax. And when I think of that, the ESOP comes in. So either one of you guys, can you maybe give me some unique features of the trust or the ESOP, which is part of the ESOP?
Well, I mean, from my perspective, one of the things I think is most attractive is the fact that the ESOC is the only qualified plan out there that actually you can allows you to borrow money. And when you start thinking about sometimes when you're thinking of an actual purchase, it may happen in multiple stages. The beauty of an ESOT is that you get that kind of a benefit. It could be a transaction that's portrayed over multiple years in time. And, you know, just from is the fact that when you get an ESOT plan, that it's principally, it's purchasing the stock of its own employees, I mean, of its own company. Mm-hmm. You've got just a different dynamic there. You've got a sense of a vision that the employees and the organization can wrap their arms around and really see, you know, that this is a place that they're going to stay and they're going to work here and they're going to do a great job because, you know, they've got this equity ownership feeling. And, you know, for the seller, it's just such a great market to look at. You know, you've built this entity and you can bring the people along with you, which I think is just, again, it's a very unique characteristic of an ESOT.
One of the things, Shane, you said is that the trust can purchase this in stages, multiple transactions. Now, maybe, Greg, what you can do for us is walk us through the basics of the first transaction. I have the benefit of having the flow chart that you put together, Craig. So I'm seeing it, but for our listeners, can you go slowly and identify who the players are and what the basic transaction is?
Sure. The typical ESOP prospect is exactly what you mentioned earlier. The person or folks that founded the company that are desirous of what I call taking their bag of money and retiring. However, they're very concerned about the future of the company. Maybe their children or work in the business. The management team that helped make them successful obviously still work in the business. And so the classic prospect for an ESOP are the founders who are desirous of retiring and funding their retirement nest egg. However, they very much want to have a little impact on the direction of the company going forward. We when we sit down and talk to business owners, there are two types of business owners. One that would like to be able to orchestrate what happens to the firm going forward or have an impact on that. Others are what we call walk-away transactions, where you sell, you pay your taxes, you walk away from the corporation, and the new owners are obviously in charge of the future and who stays and who goes and things of that nature. The last transaction that we did with ATI Capital Group was an ESOP that had been around since 1978. It was a way for the son to buy the stock from his mother because his father died in his early 50s, and this was a very successful packaging company that basically packaged socks and underwear and things like that in our area when textiles were quite thriving. So he used the ESOP to buy his mom's stock with pre-tax dollars. The employees that were there in the late 70s through the mid-80s benefited from the pension plan that was funded with the ESOP stock. However, after that transaction kind of was wound up, the future employees didn't participate. They brought us in to consider what their options were, and their stage two transaction was actually purchasing a shareholder stock, a large shareholder, another brother, 10 or 11 super minority shareholders that were employees that owned, outside of the ESOC, small blocks of stock. They also purchased or paid for an expansion of a warehouse of about $2.5 million and also refinance some debt that was on the books that was being paid for with after-tax dollars. So the transaction can do multiple things based on the objectives of the client. And, however, this was started as a classic buy out mom and dad, let the children or the management team run the company going forward, and do this in a manner that the company could repay it because they were using tax leveraged or pre-tax dollars to do so. Mom could sell it in stages so as the company could afford it. And so there's a lot of different parameters and permutations that you can use based on your objectives.
You make it sound so easy, Greg. I know it's not. Let me just go back and identify the players again. Of course, you've got the corporation that's involved. And then you've got this qualified plan, the ESOP, the Employee Stock Ownership Plan, and you've got that. But then in that, you didn't mention there's usually a lender involved, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
The leverage ESOP, the ESOP, is, as Shane mentioned, is the only qualified plan under ERISA that is allowed to borrow money. So we went to a lender who is very desirous of having these types of loans because they're highly collateralized and they're high-quality loans that are typically paid back in a very prompt manner and very strong. Plus, they complement the other lending features or other lending that the bank does for the client. So the ESOP can go to a lender, borrow money. Usually it's LIBOR plus 100 or 150 basis points. It's a very competitive term. Borrow that money, make the company makes a pension contribution into the ESOP. The ESOP then takes that pension contribution, pays a mirror payment back to the corporation of the principal and interest of the note. The corporation then makes another mirror payment to the lender equal to the principal and interest, and by running the loan repayment that was used to purchase selling shareholder stock, acquisition of a new warehouse or capital goods or a complementary or synergistic another company, competitor or such, by running this through the ESOP trust, they are allowed to repay that loan with deductible principal and interest dollars, and so therefore it's like paying the loan back with 60 cents on the dollars versus $1.50 on the dollar type of terms.
All right, well, that's the ESOP exit strategy, how to sell your company stock and pay no tax. We're going to take a quick break here, so stay tuned. We'll be back with more Three Dimensional Wealth.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roey Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roey Diefendorf.
I'm here with Greg Sheets and Shane Snively, and we're discussing ESOPs, the ultimate exit strategy tool for the private business owner. And before the break, we were talking about the mechanics, the nuts and bolts of putting this together. But let's drop back and talk about maybe some of the benefits to both the company, the shareholders, and the employees. So, Shane, maybe you can take us out. Benefits to the company in an ESOP transaction.
I think the best thing that I've found is this 100% deductibility of principal. You know, the fact that the interest on the ESOP plan is a loan to the buyout shareholder and it's deductible, I think you have what I think Greg was saying at the end of, before we went to break, was the 60 cents on the dollar. The fact that you're able to get that extra tax leveraging in to free up, again, more cash flow or capital to the company is very critical, especially when you're talking about a new owner. The other part that I would look at is the 100% deductibility of dividends that are paid to reduce the ESOP plan, again, on a pre-tax basis. That will create more tax leverage. And I think the other part that the benefit that really benefits the corporation is, again, the beyond just the transaction in itself, the fact that you have these intangible benefits from the employers that are the employees now that see that they are a part of something bigger than what they had started and that they're being rewarded. It's going to instill a strong corporate culture. The other thing I was going to say, too, is that it allows for collateral for the ESOP to be created outside the company and from a Greg was had said too was the terms and such a preferable term to the lender. When you start looking at you're able to finance capital requirements at on a pre-tax basis, that's very powerful.
I want to come back to that later because this is not just an exit strategy alone, but there are some other advantages for acquiring target companies or refinancing existing debt or purchasing capital goods. So I want to come back to those three because I think those are sort of bullet points that come to my mind as well. So we've got benefits to the company. Greg, what about the shareholders, the owners? What's their deal as they get it?
Roey, it's obviously these are the folks that are driving this transaction.
Mm-hmm.
These are business owners that have had, business brokers call them almost daily, if not weekly. They have two options. One, do we sell and walk away and have no impact, or do we sell and, do the children have the ability to repay us? Can we afford just to give it to them? And these questions are, business owners absolutely struggle with these. They've spent their entire careers growing their business, reinvesting their profits back into their business, and exiting becomes a very emotional decision, and the financial complexity just makes it that much more difficult. But the primary benefit to the selling shareholders are basically three. they can sell their stock to the ESOP. If they're a C corporation, they can qualify for what we call 1042 treatment, which means they can avoid capital gains on the sale of their stock. So if they were to sell $10 million worth of stock to the ESOP and capital gains were state and federal, let's say 18% or 20%, on a $10 million transaction, that's $2 million in tax savings in and of itself. So that's fairly attractive. Secondly, there is a ready-made market for their stock. This is closely held stock that you can't sell on the exchange. People typically are not going to buy a minority share of this company, though be it it's successful and has great revenues and cash flows and things like that. People typically do not buy minority interest in closely held companies. So the selling shareholder can sell a minority block of stock at a majority share price, avoid paying capital gains, and the market for his stock is readily made through this transaction. Thirdly, it allows them to go out on their own terms. Their stock will be sold for the price that is agreed upon, when it is agreed upon, and in different timetables based on their objectives. So they get to determine how much the stock is sold for, when it is sold for, and when the purchaser will buy it based on their objectives for retirement, though they can be long stretched out because their objective is a 10-year horizon, or they can be expedited and done in a rather quick manner if indeed that is their objective as well. So that is unique in of itself, because on the option two that we've discussed, the walkaway deal, they don't have most of those options available to them. We will sell it for, you have to pay this amount of taxes, and typically they're done after the transaction is complete.
We've had in previous discussions, though, one other benefit is staying in control, right? Having control. How does that work? How do you sell it and stay in control?
Well, when we get asked that question, Roy, I typically say to the prospect, you know, IBM, it's the board of directors probably owns 0.5% or 1% or a super minority interest in all the IBM stock, but who controls IBM? So if you are desirous of maintaining control, we can set up provisions where your chairman emeritus for life, you truly can sell your stock and still control the future and the direction of the company if you so choose. And these are techniques that that are put into the draft of the documents themselves. And truly, if you want to remain on as chairman of the board for as long as you choose to, we can set that up so you can actually control as chairman, even though you do not own any stock in your company.
That sounds like a home run for the guy that's been working his whole life, you know, doing it, building his company, and then to walk away. It was interesting because I had Stuart Lucas, who had written a book on wealth, and he was from the Carnation family, and he said, you know, they sold, I think he told me, $3 billion. So, I mean, and all of them walked away with, a couple of bucks in their pocket. But he said what happened was is our family identity was wrapped up in the company business. And they sold it and walked away. And he said they lost their identity. Now, what they did do in its place is they created a family foundation, which the family business then was now wrapped around philanthropy. And they created and they maintained their family business. But I can tell you that with all the business owners we deal with, their identity is wrapped up in this business. Their life is wrapped up in it. Some of them, it's their other child. In fact, it could be their favorite child in terms of the time and effort and love and attention that they've put into it. and to walk away and lose it. So, I mean, that to me is a very strong and powerful reason outside of the financial. Now, let's go back. I want to just ask you to touch on the 1042 exchange or treatment of the sale of the stock, because at one time they had all their money or 100% of it in this one family business. At the end of the transaction, what do they end up with?
Well, under this example, the $10 million sale, the ESOP buys their stock for $10 million. They have 12 months to reinvest it in like-kind assets. And the code has given us a list of what those like-kind assets are, and it varies from time to time. It has to be wholly owned U.S. domestic corporations receiving more than 75% of their revenues from non-franchise type of business. So it limits the scope of what you can reinvest it into. It precludes McDonald's, but it brings in the UPS of the world, the 3Ms of the world, a lot of banks that are Wachovia, Bank of America, things of those nature, of that nature. However, the complexity is that you have to reinvest it in this portfolio of eligible securities. But if in the future you sell those securities because the market dictates that it's the prudent thing to sell the stock because it's going down in value and such, or the dividend that it is paying is not large enough to meet your objectives, then buying those positions and holding them in perpetuity can be a bit cumbersome. Therefore, there is a vehicle that is exclusive to ESOP transactions called floating rate notes. And floating rate notes are notes that float up and down with LIBOR, and they are made up of these qualified assets. And so you could purchase a floating rate note that qualifies for 1042 treatment that will spin off a dividend, and if that dividend is sufficient to maintain your lifestyle and your needs, then with that one transaction, you've qualified for 1042, you've reinvested the money, it will pass with a step-up in basis upon your death to your named beneficiaries and such. Or what we find more palatable to these business owners is to monetize that floating rate note, take 90% of that $10 million portfolio and either spend it on what you would like, travel, retirement, what have you, or reinvest it into a portfolio that can be managed in a more astute, flexible manner. So for all intents and purposes, we would probably encourage most folks to take 90% of the floating rate note and use that to meet their philanthropic needs or take care of their children out in the business and things like that.
What a wonderful way to build diversification into a portfolio where you used to have one, now you can have many, and that would fall under the prudent man rules of investment. So a great strategy. We're going to take another break, and then we'll be back with ESOPs and more of Three-Dimensional Wealth. Stay tuned.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA. going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
We now return to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf. Direct your questions and comments to www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now the host of Three-Dimensional Wealth, Roy Diefendorf.
Welcome back. My guests for today are Shane Snively and Greg Sheets. We're talking about ESOPs, and I want to read a tombstone that... This is not a dead person. This is a transaction that was done by ATI Capital. And here was the synopsis. The recap and sale of the company's existing ESOP and trust represented approximately 17% of the then outstanding stock. This transaction increased the ownership of the ESOP to 100%. Once 100% owned by the ESOP, the co-trustees made an election to be taxed as an S-Corp, which under the current law eliminates the company's income tax liability. This restructure translated to an immediate increase in the value of over $2 million to the existing shareholders and participants of the plan. Furthermore, it gives the managers and employees a renewed common incentive towards improved productivity, profitability, and ultimately a higher share value. Greg, let me just ask you about the 100% S-Corp ESOP. What's that about?
Well, typically, as we mentioned earlier, that these ESOPs are done in stages. And so a good example, and this is a good example, is the founders sold a minority block of stock to the ESOP, took 1042 treatment because they were a C corporation, got comfortable with the transaction, paid, diversified their portfolios, kind of solidified their retirements and took care of their families and such. And then they did another transaction. They got them not quite to 100%, but about 83% of the stock was now being held by the corporate, by the ESOP. And finally, they chose, and their plan was to retire in totality, and they sold the last block of stock to the ESOP, which made the ESOP 100% 100% of the stock was owned by the ESOP. At that time, they converted from a C corporation to an S corporation because the founders and principal shareholders were no longer shareholders in the company, couldn't benefit from the C corporation status, and the attractiveness of being an S corporation and not being exposed to corporate, personal, state, and federal income taxes gave them such a competitive advantage on their competitors that they literally could discount the price of their services. And because they were now basically a pre-tax for-profit entity, their share price appreciated tremendously because they were in such a competitive situation compared to their peers. They were basically a for-profit, tax-free entity, which in their minds kind of redefined EBITDA and allowed them to be extraordinarily competitive in their market space. And so it doesn't fit for a certain transactions, but if the management team is purchasing the company and they agree to that the benefits of not paying taxes override some of the attractiveness of the C corporate structure, then it really allows them to be extraordinarily competitive in certain market spaces that 20% could make or break their ability to succeed or not succeed.
Well, that really takes it to another. That's hitting the long ball. That's taking it out to a whole another dimension.
That's correct, and that typically is done on the, as in stages and when it is suitable. So if mom and dad were desirous of a walkaway transaction right from the beginning, and they sold 100% of their stock to the ESOP, then converting to an S corp has its merits. But if it's done in stages, then typically we want to retain the C corporation tax leverage of the 1042 until such time that we should consider the S corp structure.
Let me open up to either one of you guys. How do you use, or can you use, the ESOP to accomplish what I call, quote, social wealth goals? Again, I'm talking about, financial, personal wealth, financial wealth, and social wealth, three-dimensional wealth. What I don't want to do is work with clients and at the end of the day find out that all these transactions have made them financially wealthy but personally bankrupt, socially bankrupt. How can you use an ESOP to solve or bring in and handle some of their social wealth? Is there a way?
I guess from looking at just the intangibles that we had discussed about the employees getting very excited and build up around the actual future vision, I don't see how that there would be a reason why you couldn't add in addition to that a philanthropic goal going forward with the actual new employees. I know here in Charlotte, the philanthropic community is exploding, and you see a lot of the public corporate foundations that are being driven. So you see, today, a corporate tithing model. And I think, with this kind of planning, creativity is endless. You could work with the employees that are coming in to build an actual corporate philanthropic model within the actual corporation. Plus the fact that you are guaranteeing to the community that this industry or that corporation is serving that they still are there and that they're going to give from this. I think that's one little aspect, or maybe even the sellers looking at in conjunction with the actual ESOP plan, possibly a charitable remainder trust where they could, with the dividend income or any of this excess income that they have, possibly look at partially doing an ESOP plan, maybe with a position of their stock, a possible charitable remainder trust.
Exactly. The selling shareholder can gift the stock to the charitable remainder trust prior to selling it to the ESOP and basically facilitate 1042, not pay tax on the gain, and the seller can receive the income for life, and at the end of the seller's life, the charity is the beneficiary of the corpus.
Well, and I think where we could, what I like about that too is where, Roe, you were discussing the use of a family foundation. I think that's where you could also build on this future legacy of the actual founders of the company with maybe a public foundation or a private foundation that the actual remainder mint would possibly go into. After they've been long and gone, maybe children that weren't in the business could actively become a part of, say, that second-generation foundation and make sure that the company continues and that they can stay involved in maybe a more personal touch within the community.
There was another, as I was looking through the materials on the ATI website, there was another transaction. Let me read this one. It's about a C Corp. Maybe you can comment on it. The recap and sale of stock to the company's new ESOP and trust represented 30% of the then outstanding stock. The company, taxed as a C corporation on the date of the sale, gives the seller the ability to convert stock into liquid assets while deferring the capital gains tax on the sale. The sale of the 30% of the stock to the ESOP allows management to retain control of the day-to-day operations of the company, communicates shareholders' intent, gives the managers and the employees a common incentive towards improved productivity, profitability, and ultimately a higher share value. Now, this was the C Corp and the retention of management. But I think one of the things we've been talking about, you know, how to sell your company, but you can use those same principles in the C Corp to acquire a target company, can't you, Greg?
Exactly, exactly. This transaction was the first transaction, which was obviously a minority block of stock sold to the ESOP. And the founders, obviously, on this transaction, control the other 70% of the stock, and the ESOP is a minority, has a more minority interest in the company. However, this company took the proceeds of the sale and used it to buy a company. A competitor had gone bankrupt after they had acquired a large amount of new equipment, and the two selling shareholders used the proceeds to purchase a large amount of capital goods, which in turn is going to increase share price and did some tremendous things for them as far as their production capabilities and not being at the mercy of materials providers for the manufacture of what they manufacture, tissue paper and commercial paper and things of that nature. So it was a tool that they used to take a little bit of money off the table. However, the majority of it was used to reinvest in capital goods that are going to then in turn increase share price going forward, as well as give 350 employees skin in the game and a piece of the company and the ability to have an impact on the size of their retirement accounts going forward. So the whole morale of this company truly shifted when the owners announced what the goals and objectives were for this transaction, and it provides them a whole lot of comfort knowing that they are going to be around for quite some time to come, that they had a vested ownership in the company, and that the company's owners were taking the proceeds from this transaction and reinvesting it back into the company in such a manner that will absolutely take them to the next level.
Well, and I would think that now when you listen to the corporate and executive bonus compensation arrangements that, you know, that right in itself has to be a substantial benefit to that employee that goes well beyond a golden handcuff. When you talk about somebody that when they're looking at where should I go, or if they've got a headhunter or recruiter that's knocking on their door to come do something for their competitor, the fact that they have that actual position, I think, goes a long way.
Well, good. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about the ideal ESOP candidate. So stay tuned. We're going to be back with more Three Dimensional Wealth.
Bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management, financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roe Diefendorf.
Our show for today is entitled ESOPs, the Ultimate Exit Strategy Tool for the Private Business Owner. And from Charlotte, North Carolina, I have both Greg Sheets and Shane Snively with me. And I just want to go back because I think there's one thing I heard you say, and I want to just hear you articulate it again. We talked about this as the exit strategy, or a strategy for purchasing capital, or a strategy for acquiring a target company. But, Greg, I think you can use this to refinance existing debt and pay both principal interest with tax-deductible dollars. Is that correct?
That's correct, Roy. To do that, we would, obtain financing from a lender, hopefully at terms that are more attractive than the debt that they currently have. We would loan the money to the ESOP. The ESOP would, in exchange for the money, would sell the company would have to issue previously unissued shares, put that into the ESOP in exchange for the cash, and the cash would be used to repay the lender or repay the existing debt, and then the lender would be repaid with the ESOP contribution. The only downside to that is the existing shareholders will experience dilution because mm-hmm. we're issuing previously unissued shares. And so if you go to the ATI Capital Group website, which is aticg.com, we go through all of those different strategies that we call the four powerful uses of ESOP, which would be the exit strategy, use an ESOP to acquire capital goods, use an ESOP to acquire another company, and use an ESOP to refinance debt. Under the latter three strategies, the company would have to issue previously unissued shares in exchange for the cash to purchase the company, to refinance the debt, to purchase the capital goods. And so if the strategy was used just to cover one of those contingencies, then we would be diluting the share price, and that in itself needs to be addressed. However, if the refinancing of the debt, acquiring the capital goods, acquiring a synergistic company more than covers and enhances the share price going forward, then that's when we employ that technique.
You know, this sounds too good to be true. I mean, this can't be for everybody. Is there an ideal ESOP candidate?
Yes. This is absolutely not a salvage technique. If the company is in an industry that is not growing, and if it is likely that the share price of the underlying company is not going to grow at a fair expected return, something in the 4 to 5 to plus range, then an ESOP is probably not a strategy that you would want to to employ. The example would be maybe possibly the textile industry here in North Carolina or the furniture industry. If the shareholders were just wanting to cash out at a high price, but the future of that underlying stock does not look good and they can't benefit from the corporate financial tool of an ESOP, if it can't put some jet fuel in their gas tanks to do some positive business things, then it is not a strategy that you would want to employ as a salvage technique. It is for folks that think and know that they can grow their share price if they have the necessary liquidity to fund their objectives, whether it's to take down an existing shareholder, to acquire capital goods, another company, refinance debt, and they know that if they do this and act in a prudent manner, that it's highly likely that they can grow share price going forward, and that's what ATI Capital does. We'll run the feasibility study that shows the impact of employing these strategies, and we'll counsel them on whether this is something that they should consider or not, and if they do, what they need to achieve to make it successful, and if they don't, why it will not be successful if they can't hit certain benchmarks and things of that nature. That being said, closely held companies, at a minimum of $10 million of revenue,
okay,
a million and a half of payroll, typically in a market space that is not, dying on the vine, so to speak, is typically where we start the process. On the other end of the scale, a closely held company that is extremely large, this might be the only exit strategy or liquidity strategy that they can employ to still maintain control of their closely held company. If their company is so big that selling such a block of stock to pay the estate taxes would be catastrophic to the company, this might be the liquidity event that they need to fund their estate tax obligation, because otherwise they're going to have to go to an outside buyer who is probably not going to want to buy a minority share of a closely held company, which could in turn just devastate the family going forward if they're desirous of keeping this large business in their family.
Shane, I know that you've spoken at the Convention for Business Brokers. I'm not sure exactly the name of it, but where does a business broker get involved in this transaction? And then I'll go back to you, Greg, and ask you how long this transaction takes from start to finish.
I would say, unfortunately, a lot of times I think business brokers are turned off by what Greg and we've been discussing today. Their real market they're really pursuing a lot of times is that third-party liquidation. Where I was, the last conference I attended, there was actually a firm there discussing the coupling of a third-party buyer, possibly maybe a business broker that has a buyer, say, on a $10 million or $20 million business might have a buyer that has $15 million that he's readily put down. And so they basically mirrored or matched the ESOP plan to help buy out the business. I think from a transaction standpoint, I think the business broker oftentimes has to rely on the team, whether that be the financial planner, the attorney, the CPA, and oftentimes these kind of strategies that are convoluted and difficult sometimes to understand are just overlooked. And I would say I think that is where a very driven team approach that involves, for example, when you're exploring all the opportunities, what is the best opportunity for the client, whether it be a third-party purchase or an internal purchase. I think that instead of looking at what is done through an ESOP plan as instead of being competition, but be looked at from a consulting perspective, let's lay the cards on the table and say which one of these transactions or strategies most benefits the client's long-term objectives. And I think when you couple that with a cash flow analysis or a due diligence on an ESOP plan, at the end of the day, you might find that it's multiple strategies. From like kind of what we had discussed previously, a plan that orchestrates three-dimensional wealth, specifically those philanthropic and personal goals, but that takes the whole picture into perspective, not just a strategy.
Good. There were 16 steps that you had to the ESOP transaction. We've just got a few seconds left. Greg, how long does it take from start to finish?
An ESOP can happen from start to finish in as short as 3 months or 90 days. However, they tend to be closer to 6 months from start to finish. There's a lot of two sets of attorneys, two sets of evaluators, independent trustee, a lot of due diligence that needs to be done, and the core fundamental is to value it in a prudent manner. And so with that valuation, you can make a lot of good decisions based on how you choose to exit.
All right. Our time is up, and so I know that there's a lot of work, and all I will say is that it's important to have an ESOT advocate. And Greg Sheets, Jane Snively, thank you very much for joining me. This past hour has gone quickly. And I invite our listeners to join me again next week at the same time with more of Three Dimensional Wealth. Thank you.
Voice America Business thanks you for tuning in to Three Dimensional Wealth with Rory Diefendorf. Please join us again next Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time for more tips and strategies for achieving total wealth management on Three Dimensional Wealth, right here on Voice America Business, the bottom line in business talk.